sings.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is Dan Friedel, and for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's December 26th, and I hope everyone had a wonderful Christmas and is looking forward to the final week of 2019 before we run full tilt like a sub-2-hour marathoner into 2020. Here in the United States, we had a big day of basketball, thanks to the schedule makers in the NBA. The league provided us with five games, a number of which featured likely playoff-bound teams. The day started with an East Coast matchup between the defending NBA champion Toronto Raptors and perennial Eastern Conference challengers, the Boston Celtics. The Celtics used a big game from Jaylen Brown to defeat the Raptors and win their fourth straight game, moving into second place in the conference, 118-102. The next game featured two of our favorite young NBA stars here on the Sunny Side of Sports. The Philadelphia 76ers hosted the conference's number one team, the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, of course, that's a matchup between Cameroon's Joel Embiid and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who was born in Greece to Nigerian parents. For that game, we're joined by Michael Luongo of the Associated Press.
The 76ers took control early and held up a late rally for a 121-109 win over the Bucks. Philadelphia was down by three when it went on a 14-7 run, taking a 30-24 lead on a pair of free throws by Joel Embiid. Up by as much as 29 early in the fourth, the Sixers saw Milwaukee close within nine late in the fourth quarter, but Philadelphia got a pair of three-point baskets by Tobias Harris and Al Horford. Embiid had 31 points, Harris added 22, Chris Middleton had 31 for Milwaukee. Michael Luongo, Philadelphia.
Thanks, Michael. We also heard from Tobias Harris of the 76ers, who lent his perspective to the win.
I just think matchup-wise, we kind of fit with them with our size, and we just had some great energy to us. I think, you know, Joel had a great energy from the start defensively. We did a great job in the first half, limited them to free throws. And from there, we just kept rolling.
That's Tobias Harris of the 76ers, who defeated the Milwaukee Bucks on Christmas Day. Harris had 22 points, and Joel Embiid had 31 for the Sixers, who are in fourth place in the Eastern Conference. Now, well, earlier in the year, the schedule makers might have thought this game would be a big deal, but they couldn't have expected it to feature what's turned out to be the last place team in the Western Conference playing against the Houston Rockets. But with the Golden State Warriors suffering an injury-filled season, that's what we got on Wednesday. However, it turned out to be the upset of the day, as the Warriors received balanced scoring from their starters and surprised the Rockets with a 116-104 victory. James Harden and Russell Westbrook combined for 54 points, but the Rockets didn't get much more from their offense. There were two more games. The nightcap saw the New Orleans Pelicans, still without prospect Zion Williamson, defeat the Denver Nuggets 112-100. However, the big game of the day was the two Los Angeles teams, the Lakers and the Clippers, fighting it out in front of the home crowd at the Staples Center. Mark Myers of the Associated Press has this report.
The Clippers beat the Lakers 111-106 in a marquee Christmas Day matchup. Led by 35 points from Kawhi Leonard, the Clippers came back from being down 15 in the second half. Montrezl Harrell added 18 points, and Paul George scored 17. Coach Doc Rivers on the win after the game.
Now it's just another game, you know, because you don't get anything for this.
There's no trophy or anything like that. It's just a win, and it's a win against a Western Conference opponent, which is good.
The Clips are now 2-0 head-to-head against the Lakers this season. Kyle Kuzma had 25 points to top the Lakers, who have now lost four straight games. Mark Myers, Los Angeles.
Thanks, Mark. The big news out of that game, however, is that LeBron James aggravated a groin injury, and he may miss some time heading into the new year. Could be another January break is on the horizon for King James, whose Lakers have struggled a bit lately after starting the season so strong. Paul George of the Clippers had this appreciation for Kawhi Leonard's defense on the Lakers' pair of James and Anthony Davis.
He had some great challenges when he was on AD, bodying him up. Great presence on LeBron. Some big-time rebounds. You know, it's y'all know what Kawhi gonna do. And, you know, he did it.
That's Paul George appreciating Kawhi Leonard's defense, along with his gift of 35 points and 12 rebounds in the Clippers' win over the Lakers on Christmas. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Speaking of games and Christmas, we're joined now by Gene Park, a reporter for Launcher, the Washington Post's video game coverage site. Welcome to The Sunny Side of Sports, Gene.
Hi, good morning. Great to be here, Dan. Thank you.
So, Gene, considering we're now just 24 hours removed from Christmas morning here in North America,
yeah.
what's your favorite video game-related gift from this time of year in your history? Mine, for sure. I was born in 1975, was getting the original Nintendo Entertainment System, and I had to look that one up. I'm guessing tons of kids like me in America in the mid-'80s got it for Christmas in December 1985. How about you?
Oh, definitely. I remember my Christmas when I grew up around 91, 92, and my dad brought home a Super Nintendo. You know, so that's the generational shift that you see there, right? You remember your first Nintendo. I remember my first Super Nintendo. You know, a lot of kids these days are growing up, and they remember their first Nintendo 64. So, you know, like we're all entering this phase in different eras. But you know, that's pretty much what happens. Sooner or later, we all get sucked into it.
Yeah, that's right. So Gene, I was always a huge sports fan, and probably my first favorite sports video game from back in the old days was the NFL game known as Tecmo Bowl. I remember like checking the mail every day, hoping that maybe the delivery driver had arrived and dropped off that cartridge. So for me, though, in the current decade, I got a PS4 a while back and started playing the FIFA series of games, and I really got hooked. How about you? Any of the sports games of the last decade or so clicked for you? Like, for example, are you a NBA 2K fan or a Madden football fan?
Yeah, I do enjoy the NBA 2K series. I haven't played Madden since, I think, the Sega Genesis days. But the NBA 2K series has always had a reputation of just being really solid. The thing about these games is that they often, they come out so often because they come out annually, and then a lot of these games have different, like, microtransaction methods to kind of pull more money out of players after the initial purchase.
Yeah, I'm a little tired of buying, packs on FIFA Ultimate Team to try to hopefully unwrap a player who's, you know, going to be a star player and help my Ultimate Team go, you know, higher and higher in the upper echelons of the FIFA Ultimate Team universe. But for me, it really has been an allure, the Ultimate Team section of really getting to know the players and getting deeper into the sport of soccer. And that's been helpful hosting this show, which is an international sports show where you have to know about the European players and the African players and the North American players from the smaller leagues. So that's really been great for me. How do you think, how valuable has virtual sports, the video game world of major sports, been to cultivate the next generation of sports fans who might not have been watching sports on TV or watching sports in the stadium, but they get really into it on their console.
Yeah, I think, it makes sports a lot more accessible, you know. There's only one really great way to learn the rules, and that's to play the game. And sometimes just playing the video game can help you learn. So, you know, it helps you enrich your experience as a fan. When I was a kid, I was just like Chicago Bulls, and then I just bought like a video game and I just kept playing the Chicago Bulls all the time, you know, because I grew up in the 90s. So, you know, that's the Bulls era, right?
Yeah, that was the big team of that era for sure.
Exactly. So, you know, I will remember that it would enrich my experience. You know, like I never knew a whole ton about soccer until I actually played a FIFA game. And then suddenly I was able to finally catch up on the World Cup and understand and process everything that's going on. So, it's an educational tool. It's a cultural tool, right?
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, I was considering the games of the last 5 years or so that have become kind of a phenomenon in a way. They're not specifically about sports, but they have trickled into the culture. So, for example, I remember a lot of the conversation about Pokemon Go when it came out in 2016 that just had people getting out and walking around more to hunt down characters. There was a lot of stories about people getting into accidents, but it probably made video game players a little bit more healthy because they were out walking around. And also Fortnite, we saw some dance moves from Fortnite used as goal celebrations in the recent World Cup games and some mm-hmm. of the big European soccer matches. What does it say about the way these games have become so present in our lives that we see them, you know, replicated on TV screens when we're watching games on Saturdays and Sundays?
Look, I say this all the time, and every time I think about Launcher, every time I talk about Launcher and the Washington Post and why we're coming video games, this is my personal line. I personally think that video games are technically the rock and roll of our era. You know, rock and roll back in the 60s was something that the adults didn't understand, the kids only knew, and they really loved, and they had their own personalities and stories that they wanted to latch onto and grow up to be. Nowadays, you know, video games are now like the rock albums of today, and the people they want to be, esports players, they want to be YouTube influencers, they want to be a Twitch streamer. The kids these days, they don't form together to put together a band. I know, because I did put together a band when I was in high school, you know?
Yeah.
But kids these days, they don't want to do that. They would rather get a webcam, they'd rather get some good software, and they'd rather set up a good studio at home so they can start streaming a video game playing from their bedroom, and they can earn money that way, and they can push themselves into a certain kind of celebrity that they feel comfortable with.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe that something that I was doing for fun in the mid-80s now could actually become a career path for people, but it is very interesting to see the evolution of esports as a career path. So we're joined by Gene Park from the Washington Post. He's a writer for the Post site called Launcher that covers video games. And Gene, I started our conversation talking about how I got my first Nintendo system for Christmas in 1985. And here it is. It's Christmas 2019, and we're 1 year away, I think, from the launch of the two next big consoles from Sony and Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So what do you know about them? And for our sports fans, how do you think the new technology will influence the next generation of sports video games?
Well, so we are expecting the next generation of consoles, PlayStation 5, surprising name, I know, and the Xbox Series X. That's what we know about the next Xbox. What we know about these systems is basically they're going to be pretty much around the top end of PCs in terms of graphical power. And the thing with the Xbox and with the PlayStation, you're going to see a lot of experimentation with streaming. Both companies are heavily invested, as is Google now, into streaming video games. The concept of playing a video game like you would watching a YouTube video just off your browser, but you just play it off your computer or your phone and everything. So that's kind of where the industry is kind of moving towards. This open, easily accessible, like, streaming environment that requires, like, heavier internet. But I think a lot of people are just going to have to, like, you know, sooner or later, we're going to have to catch up. I mean, what this means for sports is that it would just make things even more accessible, you know? Look at how crazy Fortnite has become. Fortnite itself has become kind of a social platform. It's kind of replaced Facebook for kids. So, you know, with more games coming out that allow more connectivity, you know, people, kids, adults are just going to be able to, like, live in these different metaverses, like anywhere they go with their phone, with their computer, with their console at home.
So it'll make it a more immersive experience mm-hmm. overall, whether we're talking about a sports game or a fantasy game or whatever you have it, the opportunity to engage will be even a little bit deeper than we're currently seeing today.
Yeah, and more accessible too. You
know, well, that's interesting.
If I just want to pull out my phone and play Fortnite, then I can.
Right.
And that would happen for so many other games now.
Well, that's cool. I'm looking forward to it. Fast forward 12 months, and we'll see how things go. Gene,
Thank
you very much. We're joined by Gene Park from the Washington Post launcher site, video game coverage site. Gene, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day during this holiday week on the Sunny Side of Sports.
No problem. Thanks so much, and happy holidays.
Thanks again, Gene.
Take care.
So now we're joined by VOA's Jim Stevenson, the producer of the Game Room podcast, who has this wrap-up on what's going on with the World Anti-Doping Agency's ongoing conversations about sanctions on the Russian Olympic team and some of the other top stories of the year in world soccer. Jim's podcast can be found every week at voanews.com. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Russia's Olympic Committee is to appeal a decision by the World Anti-Doping Agency to ban its athletes from competing in the Tokyo Games.
I am confirming that Russian athletes should participate at the Olympic Games in Tokyo as part of the team formed by the Russian Olympic Committee, as it's written in the Olympic Charter. We will do everything that depends on us to let our athletes compete at the Games in Tokyo under the colors of the Russian flag.
Stanislav Poznadkov, president of the Russian Olympic Executive Committee, claimed WADA sanctions against Russia violated the Olympic Charter.
If RUSADA decides not to agree with WADA sanctions, the Russian Olympic Committee will participate in this appeal process as the third party because of the Olympic Charter's violations. We've selected lawyers that will represent our interests.
WADA ruled in December that Russia had manipulated doping laboratory data to cover up past offenses. It handed Russia a four-year ban from all major sporting events for doping irregularities. Poznadkov maintains Russian athletes should be able to compete under their national flag.
Despite the pressure coming from the situation with WADA, we're working hard to ensure the most comfortable conditions for our Olympic athletes during the preparation for the Olympic Games in Tokyo and at the Games themselves.
Depending on the timing and outcome of the appeal process, Russia's four-year ban may cover the 2024 Paris Olympics instead of the upcoming Tokyo Games. 2019 was filled with many sports memories. Some you may recall, some you may have missed. In football, or soccer, Aaron Ramsey made a move away from the English Premier League at the end of the 2019-2020 season. The Welshman signed for Juventus in the January transfer window as a free agent, and he becomes the highest-earning British player ever based on base salary of more than $500,000.
Well, yeah, when I knew that Juventus was interested, you know, I couldn't refuse that, so... No, it's a great club, one of the biggest in the world, and to have that opportunity to come here and to play for them, you know, is a dream, you know, to come and play at the top level.
For the Manchester United club, controversial manager Jose Mourinho was out in March, succeeded by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
You know, when people get a new job and they say it's the dream job they've had and they've always dreamt about or play for that club or manage this club, that's more true to to me than to anyone. This has been my, of course, ultimate dream all the time. Maybe a naive dream, but I've always had that dream in my mind to have this responsibility for this huge, fantastic family of a football club.
Manchester City beat Watford 6-0 in the FA Cup final at Wembley Stadium in May to become the first men's team in England to complete a domestic treble. Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola wants to keep winning.
So Liverpool show us how tough we'll be in the future. This is the standard, the level we're going to face and try to improve. But always, always during the game, there are situations that you can improve. But saying that, he generally is more than satisfied, of course.
Liverpool became the winners of the 2019 Champions League in June after beating Tottenham Hotspur 2-0. After the match, Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp said he and the players felt a bit overwhelmed by the win.
This is completely different this year, so it's for them as well. And that's great. It's for our celebrate for supporters, of course, but for our owners as well, because they never put real pressure on us. They appreciate the development. They see the steps we make. It's for them as well. It's great. And, for the players, we were all pretty much crying on the pitch because it was so emotional. It was so big. It means so much to us.
The governing body for English football refereeing, Professional Game Match Officials Limited, spent the early season conducting live and non-live testing of technology, allowing referees to double-check goals, penalty calls, straight red cards, and mistaken identity. The ultimate decision on calls remains with the on-field referee, but decision accuracy has risen from 84% to 87%, according to Mike Riley, former English Premier League referee.
This is in its infancy. It's been used throughout the world in what, only two seasons now. And as we all experience more of it, we all have discussions, we'll come to more considered collective views of how to operate it for the benefit of the game.
Spanish football great Fernando Torres announced his retirement in June, saying he wanted to step off the field before he reached a point in his career when he can no longer play to the level he expects from himself.
I have a high demand of myself. I always want to be honest and perform at the level that I think I should. And I think the time that I will not be able to perform at the level that I ask to myself is not far. And I don't want to arrive to the time that I'm going to the pitch and I'm not enjoying. So I just want to put an end before that happens. So knowing my body and listening my body, I think, especially mentally, that time is not far. And I want to finish my career in a good way before that happens.
A statue of David Beckham was unveiled in March outside LA Galaxy Stadium in California, and with good reason. The Englishman arrived at the Major League Soccer club in 2007 and spent six seasons there, scoring 18 goals in all competitions.
You'd have turned around to me when I first joined the Galaxy, and we've talked about that day, you know, so many times. If you'd have turned around to me and said one day you're going to have a statue in front of the stadium, I'd have just laughed and, you know, been very polite about it. But, you know, to be here today to celebrate with the fans and the people and my friends and family.
And that's David Beckham talking about his impact on the LA Galaxy. Thanks for our colleague Jim Stevenson to the work that he did putting that together for this week's show. Before we wrap up today's show, I just wanted to mention some news that was trickling out in the sports world here in the U.S. on Christmas Day. Sad news about Edward Ashoff, a 34-year-old reporter for ESPN who mostly covered college football, passed away on Tuesday after an illness. So our thoughts go out to his friends and family. That wraps up the December 26th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Joe Gill. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, my name is Larry London. Tune in on January 3rd at 1500 Universal for an interesting program on border crossings featuring the songs with time in the title. It's the new year, 2020 is here, and we'll be playing songs from Michael Jackson, Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, all the hits with the word time in the title. See you at 1500 Universal on January 3rd, right here on Border Crossings.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers led by Binghamton University in Upper New York State is reporting that they have discovered the remains of the oldest forest in Earth's history. The scientists say their discovery provides evidence that the transition from ancient to modern forests began earlier than thought. What the research team found while going through ancient soil near Cairo, New York, were the remnants of an extensive root system of 385 million-year-old trees. This discovery is said to predate the fossil forest at nearby Gilboa, New York, which formerly held the title of world's oldest forest. The researchers say they found three different tree species within the ancient widespread root system. While seed-bearing plants didn't emerge until some 10 million years later, the trees forming the ancient root system had qualities similar to modern seed plants. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.